Hello, and thank you for tuning into the Attack and Release Show. My name is Matt, and I am joined today by my good friend from Nashville.
Nashville.
Let me restart.
Nashville.
Let me restart. Hello, and thank you for tuning into the Attack and Release Show. My name is Matt, and I am joined today by my good friend from Nashville, Sam Moses.
Hi.
Yes.
It Hi. Is thy.
Thy.
Hi, it is thy.
On today's episode, we are going to be chatting about a subject, EQ versus IQ, emotional intelligence. I looked up what IQ is, and it doesn't really, you know, roll off the tongue. And the intelligence quotient is essentially emotional intelligence versus like book smarts. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's like, street smart. I don't think that's like street smarts versus book smarts. I don't really think that's it. I think emotional intelligence is kind of a good bit beyond street smarts. I guess it kind of, you know, dabbles, but I don't really think that's like the path we're going to take today. We're essentially going to be touching a lot on emotional intelligence. Does that really play into what we do here? But first, Sammy, why don't you take us into some housekeeping?
Housekeeping!
Sweet. Hello, my friends, audience, listener. Thank you so much for being part of the Attack and Release Show community. If you're listening to this episode, you are a part of the community. Whether you want to be or not, here you are. Well, you probably chose to be here, so thank you. We appreciate your time and your ears. We would.
What would it be if they didn't choose to be here? It's like state-sponsored podcast.
Someone was forcing you to listen to this. I am sorry. Let us know if someone is forcing you to listen to this. Maybe we can help fix that. You should have a choice of what you listen to. Anyway, moving on. If you are a regular listener or a new listener, thank you so much. We do housekeeping. Screenshot this episode or a past episode that you're on, post it to Instagram. Yes, we're still on Instagram. We love Instagram still. Tag me, Moses Mastering. Tag Matt for the record mastering. We will reshare. We will holler at you, talk with you, get to know you. And that's really why we love to do this, to be honest, more than the likes and shares and subscribes. But we like to get to know our community. We all learn from each other, and we finish records better together. So do us a solid. Help us out. Share it. Housekeeping. Done.
Right on.
Yes.
Appreciate it. Whew. So we got about, you know, a little less than an hour to hop into this. So, excuse me. Let's just get into this. Mm-hmm. I make this mistake every time. I bring out a LaCroix right before bubbles. We do this. And it's, the bubbles wreak havoc during the podcast. So getting into this, burping into this, whatever we're going to do.
Burping into this.
How important is emotional intelligence and, you know, the customer service side of thing, understanding where the client's at? Like, is that necessary in what we do every day? It's like, we're not really seeing people every day.
Right.
Is this an important factor to mastering?
In my opinion, yes. Emotional intelligence is extremely important. I would dare say it's the backbone of my business. I would like to probably share what emotional intelligence is. I looked up a definition here once you said what we were doing today, and it says it's the ability to manage both your own emotions and understand the emotions of people around you. And that definition is definitely spot on, I think. And I think it's very important because you need to, this is the complication of emotional intelligence, is number one, when I think about that definition, is like, you have to have self-awareness of your own emotions before you can essentially be aware of other emotions. And I would say most of what we do, we talk a lot about managing people. And more so within this topic, it's more so, I think, we're managing emotions and expectations. But people come into projects with certain hopes, dreams, desires, concerns, and all of those things are really probably rooted in emotions. There is some sort of emotion attached to hope. There's emotion attached to concern, which could be like fear. There's emotion attached to whatever they're saying. And so you have to be able to discern and or interpret what people are saying. And you will have a very difficult time in life in general, but especially in your business, serving clients, keeping clients, and moving projects forward constantly and able to wrap them up and keep them going if you are first unaware of your own emotions. I am a person who was very unaware of my own emotions for probably the first 22 years of my life. I was raised very much to have kind of two feelings, which was happy or sad. And if you had a yucky feeling or a feeling of sadness, then there was something you probably did wrong and maybe you deserve it, or there's something actually wrong with you in general for feeling bad. I know the way I was raised is probably fairly common to a lot of people in the Midwest Bible Belt region. You know, just based on race, pros and cons. As I'm older now, I can see lots of things I'm grateful for. And then there's a lot of things I'm not so stoked on that happened. But overall, there are a lot of emotions out there to be aware of. And if you do not spend time understanding them, what they are, what, you know, what you're feeling internally and how to label that, happy, sad, scared, fearful, embarrassed, shame, excited, you know, things like that, then it's really hard to then make those emotions into like a healthy thing. So it's one thing to be, for me, you know, I've been through therapy on and off, which I personally have found really helpful. You know, I was able to learn how to self-regulate, which I think is something that a lot of people lack now that I kind of feel like I understand what that is. But self-regulation, or basically self-soothing, as my therapist talked about, is you need to learn how to manage your emotions in a really healthy way and also be able to be flexible, pliable, you know, in certain situations and circumstances when you do see an emotion pop up internally. And not all emotional responses need action. Sometimes, you know, if a bear is chasing you, you're scared, you should run. But sometimes someone might say, hey, the kick drum's a little too loud. And that doesn't mean you have to get primal, essentially, and let that essentially stir up some sort of fear response. You can train yourself to self-regulate and go, this is just feedback. Not only is this feedback, this is helpful. This is actually the answers to the test. And this is, you know, my client is on my team. And you can reframe by learning how to self-regulate, which is a very big part of emotional intelligence. So I've spent many a year and still do practicing how to self-regulate, be aware of my emotions, label them, which is like a very common meditation practice. The idea of labeling, you feel something, you look at it, you go, oh, that's a feeling, that's a sensation, that's, you know, happiness, oh, I'm scared. You know, you kind of get curious about things, the feelings and sensations you have in your body, be it, you know, you're at a basketball game, you're really excited, having a great time. That's something to be aware of. And also, if somebody says something really mean to you or a loved one dies or something, you know, you're going to have feelings and emotion pop up and you need to have the emotional intelligence to be aware of it and to self-regulate. With clients, with mastering, self-regulation, I think, is something everybody needs to practice. Like, we get all sorts of things thrown at us, at least I do. Every day, people come to me with projects with, sometimes they're stoked on it, sometimes they're not stoked on it, sometimes they had difficulties with it, sometimes they didn't. And they may share with you even personal details, or you may listen to the song, and the song is about X, Y, and Z, a divorce, a breakup, an affair, someone died, they were suicidal. And you have to have the emotional intelligence to handle those things while also serving them from a sonic perspective of providing a product that competes in a profitable market. It's a very interesting thing that we do. And I think to be successful, you have to have some high level of emotional intelligence. Otherwise, you're going to piss off all your clients. Like,
sure.
When I started, I feel like I didn't have emotional intelligence. And so everything felt like a cut. Like every feedback was a cut, was a dig at me, was a questioning my abilities, was lack of trust. And there's probably some truth in there. You know, there are clients that sometimes, as much as we think we're on a team, you know, I've ran into clients that really think the mix is the best and anything a mastering engineer does is terrible. You know, those sorts of clients you run into every once in a while where it's clear then they have had a bad experience. It's that, you know, phrase like, who hurt you? Like, who hurt you, mix engineer? Who mastering engineer before ruined your mix, you know, and how can I not do that? So, but, you know, if you want to have a sustainable business, you want to have clients that keep coming back, you want to be able to serve your clients and communicate with them, you know, you must be self-aware. You must be able to receive feedback and, you know, be able to self-regulate. If you feel yourself, you know, there are times, probably once a year, where I'll do a large project and my heart will still start racing sometimes where I've done thousands and thousands of projects, even like hundreds of label things now. And sometimes a brand new label project with a brand new client, once a year, I'll find myself being like this anticipation, excitement. I'm like, wow, where did this feeling come from? I thought this was 7 years ago, like of being really, really concerned and, you know, no shame in it at all, but just being aware of it, being able to self-regulate, put it in context, say, hey, you're excited. It's a brand new client. You've never worked with them. It is kind of a big deal, you know, but this doesn't define you. You're not your work. You know, you're not, you know, defined by your work. Your value's not based on whether or not they love this. And, you know, you've done this for years. Trust yourself. Like little mantras. I use mantras all day long to self-regulate and remind myself. But once you're, I'll say, able to self, you know, first be aware of your own emotions, then manage them, then that gets into like the next step to me, which is like being able to understand your client's emotions. So that's where I'm saying, like, if you can't understand your own emotions and label them really clearly and quickly, it's a training, I believe, that most people are not raised this way. It's a training you'll have to practice, then you're going to have a really hard time having empathy with your client. And I think that's, to me, like one of the big things within our business is people lack empathy for our clients and they don't, you know, it's really easy to get upset at your client. It's really easy to feel threatened that your client's trying to attack you. It's really easy to be upset when a client doesn't come back. And most of it, you know, is just a lack of empathy of putting yourself in that client's shoes and being able to understand maybe what they're feeling, understand their context. They're an artist, a mixer, a producer. They put a lot of time and money into this. They have hopes and dreams for it to essentially create a business and a career for them, you know, and regardless of if their expectations, you feel they're too large or not or whatever, you know, it's how they feel at that current moment. And so it's our job. I believe this is our job to help honor those emotions, even maybe help label those emotions for them. I talk a lot about within Moses Mastering, like my brand a lot is like bringing peace of mind. That statement comes from being able to empathize with my clients, see their emotions, even guide them to self-regulating essentially, you know, get them to step back from that cliff of spiraling of, oh my gosh, is my song going to be turned down into this and that, into the compression, blah, blah. And then saying, you know what, that's a valid thing to be concerned about. It is important that we discuss loudness, but let's focus on what you're creating. Let's focus on all these other great things about this art that we're going to put out together. And so I think that's part of the empathy is like, you can then properly empathize with a client, you know, you can redirect them, you can help, you know, help self-soothe them essentially, as well. But you can really only do that if you're capable of doing that for yourself and also operating from a place where your emotional intelligence and mental, I'll say, energy is pretty high. But yeah, that's kind of like my super long intro. Just look at this freaking block. Welcome to Sam's, therapy session. But yeah, that's my thought on emotional intelligence to get us started here, Matt. I think it's very important. I think you've got to master this on some level and put a lot of investment into it. So, Matt, what do you think about all that? Emotional intelligence.
Don't be shy this episode. I have a handful of things that I'm pretty much planning on teeing you up for.
Oh, well, cool. Okay.
Don't be shy.
I won't be shy then.
So, I think that self-awareness is super important when dealing with this. Kind of quoting something I heard Greg Kalby say on a video, it's like you don't really know what type of like baggage is coming along with like a project. You don't know who's happy. You don't really know the situation. You're kind of walking. That's kind of like walked in the door, and so it's like you want to treat everyone with like a pretty darn level head and mutual level of respect. But I mean, exactly like what Sam said is like, you know, I mean, I'll get hung up on some songs where it's like this person's talking about like a parent passing or maybe a spouse or I mean, even a child. And just like the loss that they've like had no other outlet to express that except for like song, and that essentially is them processing it. And I mean, sometimes it's like I'll hear it on the first listen, and sometimes because sometimes in mastering you're kind of like listening to the groove, you're listening to like how the balance is, and you might not listen to the lyrics or whatnot on the first go through, but it's like on the first or the second playthrough you kind of like, man, this song's really heavy. And sometimes you can really get it by like the groove and how they're leading into the song is like, oh, something's going on here. At least I feel like at the stage that I'm at, it's like just kind of listening to how a song's kind of leading in. Be like, I don't know. Some songs just feel, let's say like more like from an EQ side of things. Like an emotional intelligence side of things. Mm-hmm. Some songs just kind of feel more like important than others. And I don't mean like some songs aren't important.
Right.
But like you can tell like to the artist that this song like has a lot of meaning behind it and potentially hurt. And so like even on delivery, I have no problem just saying, you know, I really sympathize with like say like song 5 or whatever it was, I could tell it means a lot to you, and I just wanted you to know I spent a good bit of time on it trying to dial it in perfectly, and I appreciate you sharing essentially this song's journey with me. And sometimes that is like, you know, just like the recognition of, as opposed to like, you know, just like, because what's the, you know, separate you from Lander in 10 years? It's like, well, there's no emotional intelligence and, you know, an audio mastering kind of deal. And it's just going to process and spit out in 15 seconds, as opposed to somebody who's like deeply captured by something. And like, I'm going to put all I got into this one. And not saying it's not like that for the others, but I mean, you're definitely dialed in. I remember there's a band in the upstate here, and a guy was singing about, I believe it like losing, I think it was like losing his dad to cancer or something. And I don't know why, like, I don't know if it's like me being a dad or whatnot. I mean, my dad and I like work together every day, but it's like whenever I like hear or I see something about somebody losing like their dad or like their mom or something. But it's like, for some reason, it's like, especially like a male figure in their life. As like kind of like that had the potential to be a role model. It was like a really big player in their life. I don't know. Like my heart just like breaks for that person. Mm-hmm. And I'll normally like reach out and just be like, hey, I know I have no business here, but I just wanted to tell you I'm sorry. And so like I don't know why. It's just I don't know if it's because I'm a dad or whatnot, but it just kind of hits me pretty hard too. And I don't ever do anything with like any other intent. I just just being one human to another. Another industry that I've kind of seen some emotional intelligence is in my other business, we're going to be doing a little bit of a renovation of the building that we have, and internal renovation, not like wild, you put another floor on. We've been interviewing some architects and whatnot, and some like interior designers, and one of the ladies, it was kind of impressive. I don't know if she, if this technique she picked up on, if she was in, because it's a psychological technique that like I learned in school. I was a behaviorism major. And so I've never personally been to therapy, so I don't really know if it's something that's taught. I don't know where she got it from, but it was kind of interesting. And I, sometimes like when people talk to you after you say something, you're like, were you even listening to me? And it's literally everything that we said to this lady, she would pretty much echo it back to us in her immediate statement that followed, essentially us talking to her about like what we would like as far as design and everything. And it just kind of showed like a level of emotional intelligence of like, she picked up a technique that I don't know whether it was from people not understanding some stuff as far as like how her conversation flowed, or if she picked it up in from a therapist, friend, or personal venture. But I've never had anybody do that before. So it's like if we said, it's like, yeah, we want this conference room to look like this, and this is really important to us. Yeah, and then we would kind of leave that to her, and then she would say, okay, so this conference room will be this big and it will look like this, and this is the type of furniture that you would like in it. Okay, perfect. And she would report like immediately replay back to us the thing that we had said. And I'm not saying to do that. In all honesty, the conversation got a little tiresome when you realize the cadence, but it just showed a level of emotional intelligence of that she wanted to make sure that what we wanted, she was able to communicate it back to us to make us feel like we were heard in this creative process, which I imagine you, in any creative process, when you're involving a third party, one or both parties can feel lost pretty easily. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of people use like the left side of the brain. At least often. And so whenever you're kind of dealing with that, it's like, it was just like a really impressive way. It's like, I've never seen anybody professionally use this technique before. Because sometimes you'll see that in like relationships, just to like make sure that like, I don't know, maybe both parties are hearing. It's like, okay, you said this and this is what I heard.
Right.
Let me echo it back to you. Just to make sure that like everything's kind of like balancing out. But I don't know, I just thought that was like a really like self-aware thing to make sure that this person just said something creative and now I'm going to echo that back to you just to make sure that I understand your desire. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was kind of like an interesting and kind of a smart way to approach it. It also kind of like is a bit of like a CYA, like a cover your ass kind of thing.
Yeah.
As far as like, okay, and then she wrote down everything that she had heard. I just thought that was kind of neat. Self-awareness, that architect thing kind of went on my list. And then the, you know, songs about like hurt, loss, or like kind of life change. Here's another thing. It's like, well, yes, I believe you really touched on revisions, and I had that kind of later down. I think revisions really require a significant amount of emotional intelligence, because just because somebody said that you did something and it didn't really jive with them, it also doesn't mean that you're wrong in what you did.
Mm-hmm.
Because to you, somebody is hiring you for your taste. And if your taste is a shelf at 3K, then that's cool. Because that was your taste in their music, and that's what you thought you needed to do in that situation. But, and I mean, and it could 100% be their listening environment could mm-hmm. be a bit, like that 100% could have been an appropriate move, but their listening environment might be a little wild, or they run it out to their like 96 Camry and they're listening and it just doesn't really sound good with the rattly speakers. Mm-hmm. I don't know. The 96 Camry, like the NS10s.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to kind of echo what you were saying as far as like revisions and whatnot. And even though you may not be wrong, the one thing that I 100% want to echo is what that person has handed you when they give you revisions is the checklist in order to make their project sound how they would like it to sound. And then both of you are good. You move on. You can invoice, whatever you do, deliver the final stuff. And then you move on to the next session. And that person is 100% set after those revisions to, in theory, go to distribution. So I know we've done a handful of episodes on revisions, but you know, just wanted to talk about it. And you kind of opened my eyes to that as far as like all revisions are, it's a checklist to wrap the project.
Mm-hmm.
And while you're not trying to blow through a project, it's like at the same time, it's like generally there is a bit of a cue and it's like, you know, we do need to move on and we do like, and some people do have a difficult time also like bringing this artistic kind of, this artistic endeavor, you know, to a close.
Right.
There's also, you know, sometimes a lot of other voices. The mix engineer said this. What? Who said that? Whether you are or not. What would you say? No, I want to stay on this. I want to stay on this one because I just did this one. How do you deal with being wrong?
How do I deal with being wrong? Well, in my personal life, which is probably how I am in business life. When I am wrong, well, in my relationships when I'm wrong, I apologize.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
It's a healthy response.
The initial is usually, I'm so sorry I did this or I made you feel this way. My intent, you know, in my marriage, my intent is never to essentially be a jackass. never to be wrong in theory or, you know, upset my wife by the things I do. But sometimes my approach could be wrong. And I think that comes from the ways I've found to be less wrong over the years is to be a better listener and be more emotionally validating. Which is a bit of, I think, what you were just talking about, Matt, which is when my wife says something, and I'll circle back to wrong. My wife says something, I will say, I hear you saying this, which is a counseling thing. We did couples therapy, which was wonderful. And we've been married happily, I'll say, for, this is going on 14 years. And so before, though, when we would get into kind of arguments, it's usually because I was misinterpreting or mishearing what my wife was saying. So she'd say this, this, and this. And I'd say, now I say, I hear you're saying this. Is that what you actually mean? Because sometimes we are emotional people. Sometimes we say things we don't mean in the heat of the moment. Sometimes we say things and we don't realize we said that thing, you know, misspeak. People misspeak all the time. They don't mean to, but our brains are human. And we sometimes,
sure,
you know, swear on our life that we said this. And then your partner or someone else is like, no, you said 2 p.m. It's written down here. Like, no, I said one. I said one. And I've found by, you know, applying the, I hear you saying this. Is that correct? As kind of dumb and not sexy as that is, that solves and diffuses so many arguments starting and, you know, being wrong. But, you know, when I feel like I am wrong, there's definitely an apology. You know, with a client, I don't even know. I mean, you could say I'm essentially wrong if they give feedback of like, hey, the vocal's a little too sizzly now, whatever you did in the top end, we don't want that to be. But I don't even view that as wrong, like personally. That's not the same to me as like me just being a complete kind of buffoon to my wife sometimes, or my friends in theory, if I drop the ball or mishear something. So I would say with my clients, there's almost, now that we're talking about this, like, I don't even see a wrong or a right. It's more of like, I'm just constantly trying to validate them. So if they say, hey, you know, this feels like the vocal's a bit too sizzly now compared to the mix, and we really loved where the mix was, my response is always, you know, thank you for that clarity and context. Like, that helps a lot. You know, and then I just say, you know, I'm happy to run a new one. And then when I run a new one, I say, here's this new master with that improvement on the top end. And then they listen to it and 9 times out of 10 say, perfect. Thank you so much. So I'd say when I'm wrong, you know, hearing myself speak now for a few minutes, it's like, you know, validating the other person is a big one. Like, that would be step one. And then if an apology is needed too, if you've hurt them or really, you know, dropped the ball or something, if you said you were going to do something and you, you know, pooped the bed, then yeah, an apology might be needed for sure. But within clients, I very much, I'll say, I don't use the language wrong or right. I was just having a conversation with a guy yesterday, better. I have a lot of mixers ask me, what can I be doing better? And I respect the desire to improve on oneself. But this idea in our music industry of better often leads people on this wild goose chase to actually then like self-sabotage accidentally, because when we get done with a project, the mixer's happy, the producer's happy, the artist's happy, I'm happy, everyone's stoked. And then the mixer comes to me and says, what could I have done better? I'm usually like, nothing. And they're like, no, that's not true. Like, what did you do? And I'm like, you're misunderstanding, in my opinion, mastering of like, I'm not here to like find all the faults in your mix. Like, and who am I to even say there's faults? If everybody's stoked on it, who am I to come in and say, this was the wrong automation you used. This was the wrong stereo image to put those guitars that far left and right. Like, and a mixer will say, you know, yeah, but I, you know, what can I do to be better? And it's like, the better, we've talked about it in another episode, like, better is such a moving target, and better is just this fake, it's fake thing. Like, and I think that's kind of with like right or wrong. Like, sometimes when I'm helping people with mastering, teaching them, or like just talking them through, you know, the first years, they're always asking me, what's the right, you know, what's right and what's wrong? What's the right amount, the right limiter? What's the right EQ? What's the right move here? What's the wrong ratio to use? The wrong attack time? You know, what shouldn't I do? I have people all the time, what, can you just give me 3 things I really shouldn't do? You know, and it's like, no. You shouldn't ask those sorts of questions. How about that? Let's start there. You know, like, so, you know, with wrong and right, I'm very hesitant, even with clients, if they give me feedback many years ago, I would even probably go on the defense to be like, you're wrong. Like, you think the kick needs to be louder? The kick's like overwhelming, or, you know, the vocals, it's already too bright and you're saying make it brighter. Like, I don't really engage with myself or with the client anymore about a right or wrong. It's just, it's all about, I'll say, being emotionally intelligent to realize that you are a service provider, a medium in which You get to participate briefly in someone else's art and timestamp, and that it's just a gift to honor that, you know, more so is where I work from is, you want it brighter? Great. Let me try and figure out how to make it the quote-unquote best brightness in the context of what you're looking for, you know, or the reference you're pointing me to. But to circle back to when I'm wrong, emotionally validate the other person, apology if needed, and understand that you also are a human and that you need to be so gracious with yourself and realize that you have probably to the best of your knowledge, you've never done this before. So that was a really freeing thing I heard a long time ago from somewhere of this idea of a mantra that you've never done this before. Why would you be perfect? Why would you know how to handle, you know, your best friend passing? Or why would you know, why would you have the tools already to do all this? Why would you know how to handle client feedback from a major label artist or a producer who's feels like they're yelling at you? You know, you've never done this before. Yes, there are things we can prepare for in theory, but until you're in the situation or you move along in life and career, there's just going to be stuff all the time that comes at you that you just can't prepare for outside of, I'll say, preparing yourself to be able to label emotions, feelings, and self-regulate, and then create some space to be able to decide, how do I want to handle this situation? Do I want to engage with it or manage it? Do I need to spend attention and time on this, or can this wait 3 hours? Those sorts of practices and mantras and questions are things I literally go through still every day. Like, and they help me be, I like to think I'm an emotionally intelligent person, you know, at this stage. And if you are not equipped with tools, you know, ready to go, just like in mastering, when I get a song, I'm like, all right, probably this, this, and this to get us across the finish line. Like, it's an instant gut response. When I started, it was not that way. It was like, oh, I need to try 20 things out. I think I know where I need to go, but I don't know what thing is going to get me there. Now it's like, I think I know where I need to go, and this is probably going to get me there. Same with like emotional intelligence is like, when you're first starting, it's kind of like, you know, you're not sure, what is this feeling? Is this actually shame, or is this fear? Is this happiness, joy? What is this thing? And is, does it need attention? Does it not need attention? You kind of like develop these toolkits, at least I do, like mantras of, do I need to engage with this thing or manage this thing? Do I need to spend time with this now, or can I tell myself mentally, hey, if this is really important and bothering us, we can address it at 6 p.m. tonight, you know, or 10 a.m. tomorrow. You know, and that's how I handle those things. So wrong, validate the emotion and or apologize. That's how I respond. That's how I like to think I respond when sure. I'm wrong. And I do think I do that most of the time these days, unless I've just had a really crappy day and I'm probably like not ready to be wrong. Catch me at a wrong time. And maybe the response is a bit sharp. But overall, I have a pretty good handle on that now at this stage in life, thankfully. Okay, that's wrong. Thoughts?
I mean, I would say that I'd say I'm pretty similar in response. Is I like to make sure the other person knows that, because essentially the premise for you being wrong is that you have been notified of, like, essentially you being wrong.
Yeah.
And so, and since it's emotional intelligence, which implies you're dealing with somebody else, then whether it's acknowledgement of like you being wrong, validating the emotion, as you said, or just coming up and saying, you know what? You're 100% right. I apologize. I think another thing, I don't really know if I have like a gauge on this. I guess this can be difficult for some people. And if it is, it's nothing bad, but Some people don't like to apologize or maybe even like admit like false, mm-hmm. like even if you're not wrong, but it's like, it's what the client wants in something, then right. It's like, you know what, just like this will kind of get us over the hump and like, let's just, I'm sorry. And essentially work towards a best solution to, essentially not like satisfy the client and make a move on, not necessarily that, but, from a stance of, like essentially like what's going to like fit this client's needs and essentially like going through, whether it's like, I have no problem with phone calls. I know some people don't like that. I have no problems like, hey, I'm sorry. I may have misheard what you were saying. Let's hop on a phone call if you're free. Or, I mean, we can stick to email. That's totally fine, too. Some people are, like, super tight budget for time, and it's just not an option. But it's like, hey, yeah. Like, you get, like, I at least, like, give them, like, an option to, like, communicate in a different way. I'm not always, like, the best written communicator. I think I'm okay, but I don't feel like I express myself as well in writing as I do verbally, which verbally we have probably 160 plus episodes of how poor my verbal communication is. So, but in essence, I do apologize whether I really believe I'm wrong or not, because in that situation, this is what the session needs. And I'm not really in the position to get into a fight with a client. And it, at the end of the day, it's their art. I'm not somebody to say the client is always right, but in the world that their art lives in and what they need to hear, it's like, I want to make it perfect for them. Like at the end of the day, I want them to be overjoyed with their masters, and I'm really willing to move quite a bit in order for that to happen. So, yeah, if I had to give any advice, it'd be just, you know, don't be too big to give an apology. Mm-hmm. Here's another one that's kind of weird. I have two more questions for you. Great. How do you deal with the client being wrong?
The client being wrong. Can you give me an example of what you're meaning by that? I hear you say the question, but help me understand it. Like, what would be an example when the client is wrong to you?
I don't know. I'm honestly trying to like do the inverse of like you being wrong. So it's like, if you're wrong in an instance or the client's wrong, and maybe it's not, it's not the client.
Well, yeah. Sorry. I had something pop
it's
in
like,
my head.
Maybe it's not the client. Maybe it's like somebody at the mix engineer has entered the chat.
Yes.
One of those things. Or it's like there's like some kind of like awkward dynamic that's now muddying up stuff.
Yes.
And
that happens. Yes. Yeah. That situation happens.
So I really just wanted to like invert it, because it's like, you know, this is a people episode.
Right.
And so like all cards are on the table.
Yeah. When that happens, I will usually, if there is a weird dynamic happening, so say everybody's stoked, email comes back from the artist and maybe the manager or label, we love it, everybody loves it, we're good to go. And then 20 minutes later, say the mixer or someone else involved says, hang on,
I'm not throwing
just
shade
a second.
To mixers either.
No, I'm not either at all. Doesn't have to be a mixer, could be a producer. Just someone who is essentially, let's just say in the minority, if five people signed off on it and then one person who is also not paying you in theory, not like your true client, says, hey, I'm hearing this, this, and this, and let's run another version, please, like this. I will usually jump on the phone immediately if this is a brand new situation with the person who hired me and get clarity.
Yeah.
Usually it's the A&R. So very specific. Like, I've had this happen. It happens more at label things when there's more people involved. I will jump on the phone of the person who first hired me, who said, Sam will be a great fit. We should have him, you know, work on this record. Because that means on some level they trust my taste to finish it. Mm-hmm. So I will usually text them, hey, man, you know, got that feedback back, you know, feedback from so-and-so. you know, I'm happy to run one, but I just, can we jump on the phone for 5 minutes? Jump on the phone. Hey, thanks, you know, for your time. We make this quick. I just want to understand and make sure we're all on the same page that we want to run this version and make sure I know essentially who's in charge of calling this record done. That's how I phrase it. Who's in charge of calling this done? Is it
super professional?
Yeah. Is it the mixer? Is it this producer? Is it the, you know, your VP? Is it your boss? Is it the artist? I need clarity on who has final say. And sometimes they'll say, well, it's you. And I say, okay. Well, if it's me, my opinion is we shouldn't run another version. You know, everybody else is really happy. So-and-so's paying me. And so this person's role, while their opinion is, I'm happy to hear it, they're not paying me. And I would rather, you know, defer to pleasing the person paying me who already said they love it than changing that.
Sure.
Then having to send it back to that person who already loved it. And make them think something was wrong then with their gut reaction, you know, their trust in me or their own taste. If they say, well, it's so-and-so and, you know, we're just lucky to have them on the project, so we need to defer to them, then it's a quick, fully understand the situation. Guy's, you know, been in the industry for 30 years, has 10 Grammys. We are lucky. You guys are lucky you got him on this thing. He's cutting you a deal. All right, no problem. I'll run the revision. You know, as long as everybody's cool with another version coming, no problem. Run it. That's really the two ways I deal with it at this stage. I've tried every way of tough guy, pushover guy, but really it comes, I think I immediately need context and expectations and like who is signing off on this record. I just need to know where I land, like on the hierarchy of this project, where is my opinion? That's what I need to know. And if they say, it's actually pretty low, we don't really care what you say, you know, in a nice way, nobody's ever mean about it. But, sure. You know, they're like, the artist we value, the producer we value, the mixer we value, the A&R we value, and the VP. And whatever they tell you, you got to do, I just kind of say, okay, that's fine. You know, it's like, it's part of the gig. Like, I have the right to not take the gig if I really want to die on a hill. And say, you know what, that feels disrespectful and kind of a waste of my time then. What am I doing here? I'm just pushing buttons and I'm a yes man, essentially. I've been down that route of feeling that way, you know, feeling like, what am I doing, wasting my time? And you just kind of, I don't know, everybody's different. For me, I kind of got over that. I learned that by earning some trust by the bigger time people or the people that I would say have egos. They do eventually, it feels like, start to trust you more. Less notes, less comments, you know, start to pass things on V1 once they feel heard. A lot of people just want to be heard.
Sure.
You know, a lot of people just want to be validated. It's validation is huge in the world. You know, if someone wants to be heard, a lot of the times all you have to do is say, thanks for that feedback, I'll run it. You know, and you run it and then they're like, man, you're so good at your job. Like I've had that, you know, where it feels like it's a real headed south situation. You know, like they're really unhappy and you're like, oh crap, they pointed out like 8 things. And so I guess I'll just do that. I don't know. You do it, send it back. And then all of a sudden they're like, you're the best engineer ever. You know, like I'm going to hire you again. And you're like, oh, interesting. Did not see that coming. Mm-hmm. But yeah, when a client is wrong, you know, I just have to really, really be careful, I think, for me and put that in context of, you know, why do I think this is wrong and could it be right? Is there any, you know, something I say a lot to myself, is there any truth in here? That's something I do a lot of is when someone is saying something to me that immediately I can feel internally, I'm going like, oh man, I do not agree with this at all. Like the gut reaction, like, no. Like, in my head, I'm like, you're so wrong. I immediately then respond and go, okay, Sam, that's fine. Let's put that in, you know, the left side of the box. And then let's surround this box or this context, this conversation with, is there anything they're saying that it could be true? Like, is there anything in here that's true? You know, that you can bridge the gap, you know, find the commonality. Is there anything here you actually both care about? You know, or is there anything in the midst of maybe a poor presentation of something that feels offending that is actually them trying to, you know, be a part of the team. So that's something I say a lot. And then my other really just like Sam's mantras. Other thing I really like saying that I just picked up this year from Same As Ever, the book I already talked about that everybody should read, I think, called Same As Ever. The guy talks about phrasing things when you have a disagreement with someone or you think they're just like totally crazy. You just have to ask yourself or ask them, what have you been through that I have not that makes you think this way? And when you do that, I found that question of if someone says something to me that I'm like, man, that just sounds crazy. You know, you just say crazy, like somebody believes in Bigfoot, you know, and they're like so sold out that they're Bigfoot's real, you know, and whatever. And it's easy to be like, that's stupid. There's no way, you know, but you could also ask yourself, you know, what have they been through that led them to believe that Bigfoot is real? You know, and then you could maybe find some things or like understand their story. That might be a terrible example, but don't lose the little mantra based on that terrible Bigfoot story. But ask
might
yourself.
Try to find a different way to phrase it.
Yeah, you
but
know.
I think it's a really good, like, you know, kind of like a preset to a plugin. Yeah. I think it's a really good starting point.
Yeah. Of just asking yourself, what has this person been through that makes them feel this way? You know, and can I learn from that, you know, or help see this context better? So that's kind of how I, you know, respond to if I think a client is wrong. I kind of go through that, those different mantras and contexts. Okay.
Sure.
There that is.
So for the sake of time, I'm going to keep moving on with my last question.
Yes, let's do it.
How do you increase your emotional intelligence?
For me, it was going, asking an expert, a therapist who's trained in, you know, emotions, essentially, relationship, marriage counseling. My first session in therapy was him pulling out a laminated piece of paper, and he made me point to the emotion I thought I was trying to describe, because I went in there saying, you know, this sucks and blah, blah, I feel this way and it's so shitty. And he's like, what's shitty? What is that feeling? I'm like, you know, shitty. He's like, no, but what is that? You know, is that fear? What is shitty? Is it, you know, I hear that it's shitty. I agree with you. That's a shitty shit situation. Sorry for saying shitty so much on this podcast. But, you know, like, what does that mean to you? What is the root of shitty? Is that make you feel embarrassed, shamed? You know, shouldn't have happened to you, injustice? And I spent the first months in therapy just pointing to words that I thought were the actual thing I meant. So a training, you know, that's how I improved my emotional intelligence, was training and practice over and over again, and learning how to label feelings and sensations in my body, in my head, you know, and being able to, once you're able to label things, you really can take the power away from them or give them power. It really can diffuse yourself internally. I used to be a person who really like ruminated on things. Ruminated. Is that the word? Yeah. Ruminate. It's when you
as
just
like holding a grudge kind of thing and just like milled on it.
Yeah. You just like run it through your head 1,000 times, you know? And, you know, once I kind of learn how to label things, it's like I can diffuse that circle, you know, circle in the drain immediately with a thing. So, I think improving your emotional intelligence, it takes practice. It takes a willingness to learn, to probably go through some intense feelings maybe, or even past trauma. Not everybody, I want to make this so clear, not everybody needs to go to a therapist. That was just helpful for me. The way I process, I'm an external processor, I'm a talker, if you don't know that by now, by the podcast. And I process much better verbally with someone going back and forth than maybe an internal processor, or even someone who is able to self-regulate better naturally. There are people that don't need to go to therapy and people that benefit from it. I'm a person who was resistant, and then I went, and then I found it to be extremely helpful. It's just been a really good outlet for me on and off through the years as I've grown through different seasons, stages of business. And it's definitely, for me personally, been a massive, that's the number one place where I improved my emotional intelligence, was going to someone who in theory has been trained in that. I hired them to bring peace of mind at the end of the day to me, to help reframe and clarify what I actually was thinking, feeling, to even validate the things I was thinking and feeling, to help label the injustices that have happened to me. I don't want that to sound too dramatic, but everybody has injustices, you know, treated unfairly, somebody did something to you, you know, and then be equipped with the tools to self, you know, regulate, self-soothe, and then decide what you want to do with those things. So for me, it's therapy. I read a lot of books too now on business therapy, emotional intelligence. I mean, there's books, emotional intelligence. I think I took the test a long time ago, and now there's like a 2.0 and a 3.0. I think there is a book called like Emotional Intelligence that is like the classic original book on it. But yeah, that's how I've done it. And it's taken years and years and years of practice. You're hearing me speak on this, you know, like a good 7 to 8 years into therapy and practicing. So when I started therapy and whatnot, I would not be able to communicate about it like this at all. So be gracious to yourself, but make sure you are working on your emotional intelligence. It'll prove your own life. You deserve to be emotionally intelligent. You deserve to be able to self-regulate and self-soothe. And then you'll find that it improves your relationships all around you. And that is that. Time.
There you go.
Thoughts?
I'll give my little answer to to this last question, and then we'll wrap.
Yeah.
Just being aware of time. So how do you increase your own emotional intelligence personally? I think first is like listening to others. And sometimes it's like listening to others and maybe even kind of getting lost in the conversation to a point to where like you're just trying to understand not like what they're saying, but also like where they're coming from. And then also understanding that like what's coming out of their mouth generally has like heart behind it. And generally people say what they believe. And so even if like what they're saying is not resonating with you, like someone who say like I disagree with and we just do not see eye to eye, I at least want to try to understand the heart behind what they're saying and try to understand their point of view.
Yeah.
Which it doesn't really take long to understand somebody's point of view, but you, and I mean, I think it's one of the things that I think like we've kind of lost as a society is like, it's like people can have like other opinions and like, we don't have to agree with one another, which is totally fine, you know, to live in a society together, but it's like opinions that are different really keep you from, you know, living in an echo chamber of like your thoughts being supported by other thoughts that are exactly like your thoughts. It's one of the things social media does is like once the algorithm gets you, it's like, I'm going to feed you more of you.
Right.
And it's like soon nobody's talking to like people who they don't agree with. And it's kind of crazy. And you end up with like a lot of division and a lot of separation. So number one is like listen intently to like what the other person is saying. Also like this sounds like I'm saying the same thing, but it's different, is like engaging with others. And so sometimes it's just like about like asking questions and asking why and just trying to like dive in and more in all honesty, like figure out their heart behind what they're saying. Because it's like kind of like emotional intelligence is kind of like a pursuit of like the other person's desire, the heart, and where they're coming from. So you want to listen to them and then you want to engage with them. And it may just be you just trying to understand. And like, I would 100% also understand there are going to be people that you will never understand. And that's just that. I mean, I had an employee in a business a lifetime ago and him and I were never on the same page. And I would say something and he took it another way. And it's like, that's not at all what I said. And it's like, we like, even till like today, like him and I still talk and it just, he just does not understand what I'm saying. And whenever he repeats back what I'm saying, it's like, that's not at all what I said. And so I don't know where the disconnect is, but anyway. So engaging with others, and then like trying to understand why people think the way that they do and like how they are listening, with the full understanding that you may never understand, but it's like, you know, at least like listen and kind of be there. Generally, people will say what they want. And so it just kind of out like, it's like, I don't know, from someone talking to your ears, it's essentially like an upload and a download. So just all through, you know, vibrations in the air. And so listen, engage with others, and try to understand why people think the way they think, and how they listen. And I think kind of to echo what I already said is to really understand the heart behind where they're coming from. So I think that's, those are some good first steps. So any rebuttal, Sam?
None. Take us home.
Cool. Let's head home. So if you, do we record for a long time? This doesn't look like a long time, but I think it's.
It's an hour.
Yeah, it's like I see the time, but like I see the time on Logic, and it's like, what are you doing? Oh, I see, because it goes to two because it starts at one. Okay, an hour and 3 minutes recording. Okay, I was like, what am I looking at here? All right.
I remember my first time in Logic.
I normally don't look at an hour's worth of time elapsed in Logic. I have very few records that go over an hour. All right.
Take us off.
Boys, girls, whatever you are. If you listen this far, thank you so much. If you hear the beat cue note from the background, that was made by Sam. He does a great job at this. If you wouldn't mind just giving him some love and saying thank you for making these episodes sound awesome, your thanks and appreciation would just be an extension of my gratitude. And so I appreciate that. If you need a mastering engineer, Sam can be found at Moses Mastering. I can be found at For the Record Mastering. If you wouldn't mind sharing this part of the podcast, I would be really appreciative. Give us some stars, give us some likes, post us on Instagram, send it to your grandma. She'll love it too. She could probably learn a lot about emotional intelligence from your grandma.
Absolutely.
If you made it this far, thank you so much for listening. And I think that's really all we got. Morning, afternoon, evening, whatever you're having, have a darn good one. We'll see you on the next episode. Cue the music.
Cue it.